Welcome into the Golf Channel podcast presented by Top Golf. This is Jay Coffin here alongside my trusty colleagues, Ryan Lavner and Rex Hoggard. Boys, we're going to talk a little bit about newsmakers, all right? The GolfChannel.com editorial team comes up with our top 10 newsmakers every year. We sit, we debate, we talk, we discuss, we vote, we throw out topics, and then we come up with such a strategic top 10 to just blow the doors off everybody in the golf world. So before we come up with that list, we're going to sit around and do what we've done every other year, but we're going to do it on this podcast. So I think, obviously, when we're talking about anything, what the top newsmaker is, like we have for anything over the last 20 plus years, we go straight to Tiger Woods, right? So let's go ahead and get Tiger Woods out of the way. Biggest memory, the things you're going to remember most about him, winning?
Well, winning.
Rex, you've seen every one of them, right? You've been to every event this year.
Yeah. It's winning, but it's the way he did it. You know, we talked about this a little while ago, Lavner and I did, and it's the arc of the whole comeback. It's the idea that when you started the season, we had all of these unknowns. I mean, we'd seen it before. There was a lot of skepticism. I didn't have very high expectations. You didn't know how his
back. He didn't have very high expectations.
And just the way everything fell into place. I mean, he tested himself week in and week out on a different level. It was make the cut. It was make the cut in back-to-back weeks. It was try working on your game, trying to get his swing something closer to where he wanted to be. He puts himself into contention at the Valspar Championship. All of these different steps that ended up at this sort of storybook finish at Eastlake with the victory. It's impossible. Look, we've sat here every year that I've been here, and it's been Tiger Woods, I'm sure, every single year for a lot of different reasons. This year is completely different. It was entertaining. It was enlightening. You've never seen this side of Tiger Woods before. I mean, all of these things made it a very, very special year for him.
He's been defying expectations since 1996, but I think this just blew his mind what he was capable of doing. If we went back and looked at the podcast that we did at this time last year, we're like, oh, you know, if Tiger can just play four times, right, or you know, maybe he contends on a weekend, that'd be a successful year. If you're going by those expectations, his year, if you're grading it, was an A++. It was almost, you hate to use the word impossible, but it was damn near improbable.
It was very
the
much
way
improbable.
That he played this year.
Yeah.
I think he would completely agree with that, just because, Rex, you saw him in the Bahamas in December. It was just so eye-opening how much speed he had, how healthy he looked, more importantly, how happy he looked. So I think anyone who is paying attention, you got a little bit excited just thinking about what 2018 could bring. The fact that he was able to win a tournament was unbelievable. The fact that he almost won two majors, probably could have won two majors, was just unbelievable. So I think when you looking ahead now to 2019, I think everything's back on the table. I think 82's back on the table. If he can maybe pick one off.
I don't know that 18's back on the table quite yet.
If he can pick off a major in 2019, I think you can certainly make a case that it's not out of the realm of possibilities like maybe it had been over the last couple of years.
Sure.
You'd be wrong, but you could make the case.
It's still highly unlikely. But
it's more likely now than it was a year ago.
Yes, you can make the case that it could be back on the table.
And you know what, also, too, thinking about it is, you're right, it's funny you mentioned that about, like, go back and see what would he be saying a year ago. Go back and even say what we were saying at the U.S. Open. You remember how bad he looked at the U.S. Open? Like, if you're talking about...
He'd at least flashed at that point.
No, I agree. But I remember, I think Will Gray even wrote it. You know, I think he wrote for our website that I'm just not prepared to think that this guy can contend at a U.S. Open ever again because of how bad he looked.
Yeah, that one didn't. Right? That one didn't age well.
It did not age well. No, but the point is that was out there as recently as just a few months ago, and then he goes at the Open, the PGA, you know, wins the Tour Championship, looks like an old man again at the Ryder Cup, but we had the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows all in about 10 months, which was just terrific, and that's why he's always going to be the guy.
And the way he embraced the moments, we had never seen that in his career. The way him coming across the bridge at the PGA Championship with just those thousands and thousands of fans adoring him and him actually acknowledging them. And I think there was a moment where, from an emotional standpoint, he never allowed himself to do that in his career. Yeah. It was always the blinders were up.
Take it in. He's never,
And I think for him, it was an opportunity to see that, look, it wasn't that long ago, I was at a crossroads. I wasn't sure where. I was having to come to grips with the idea that my professional career could be over. And now here he is on top of this bridge, came up short, but made a very, very good run at it at the PGA Championship. And I think there's an appreciation now that wasn't there before.
There's a likability there that wasn't
there, is.
It wasn't there before, just with his own peers, the way he's more engaging with them. He's more willing to give advice or I can remember Mackenzie Hughes at the Players Championship when he played with him, just kind of guiding him around, mm-hmm. knowing that he was nervous, putting his arm around him, just trying to make him feel welcome. You'd never see that 10 or 15 years ago. So this, in a lot of ways, is a new Tiger. But I think being more willing to let fans in, he also kind of showed his vulnerabilities this year. The narrative for a lot of the years was, boy, did Tiger forget how to win? Or does he need to relearn how to do that? He'd had some Sundays that were forgettable, whether it was in Valspar laying up off the tee there or what he did at the Open Championship,
Bay
where
Hill,
he faltered on 11 and 12.
Bounds.
So there was certainly some frailties that he did show that give you a little bit of pause going forward. He didn't play particularly well down the stretch at Eastlake either when he was going to win number 80. So those are great problems to have if you're a Tiger, because he probably never would have expected that he could even be in a position to win again. But those are certainly things that you could keep an eye on.
Turns out that Tiger Woods is human, and it turns out we like him just as much, maybe more, when he is.
I like him more. Yeah.
All right, Tiger Woods aside, which, you know,
that is a big aside.
How do you ever say Tiger Woods aside? Let's get into some other newsmakers of the year. When we're rounding out a top 10, where should we go? Who should we discuss? I mean, you know, you've got Justin Rose, Brooks Koepka, the Ryder Cup. I mean, there are a lot of heavy topics out there, aren't there? Which way you want to go?
How about Phil? How about Tiger's match partner?
Yeah.
It's got to be Phil.
It's got to be Phil. I mean, I think Phil is second for a lot of different reasons. I mean, unlike Tiger, Phil made just as many headlines for what he did off the course as he did on the course.
Yes. Most bizarre year of a very bizarre career.
Yes. I mean, winning in Mexico, again, the highest of highs for him at his age.
Against
Justin Thomas. To do it in the way he did, probably at a point in his career when most people, including myself, probably thought that, no, he wasn't going to get it done again. Now, fast forward to Shinnecock and whatever it is he did there. I mean, I still think there's still confusion. I mean, I don't think anybody's certain. I mean, you're talking about a man who... Look, he will do some crazy things from time to time, but you've never questioned his respect for the game, and that was, in a lot of ways, very, very disrespectful on a lot of different levels.
Mind.
He lost his mind, and he still hasn't given us a very good reason why. Then go to the Ryder Cup, where he clearly was the de facto captain. I mean, let's don't try to hide from him. I mean, he's calling a lot of shots in that team room now, and they didn't play out very well. I mean, there's a lot of reasons he made headlines this year.
Yeah, I think this was kind of the year that he made some concessions. I think he conceded, maybe in his own mind, and certainly to anyone watching on TV, that he's never going to win a U.S. Open. I think that dream is gone. I think he realized that, and he just snapped.
Don't think the golf god's going to let that happen.
I think he was just broken, and that's the end of his U.S. Open dream. I think he conceded at the Ryder Cup that this is probably his last one, and it's probably better off. I think he's a great influence in the team room. People like to be around him. He's clearly a smart guy who knows a lot about strategy. Have him in that role, but I think he conceded at the Ryder Cup, going winless as he did, admitting afterward that he shouldn't be playing that type of golf course ever again with the narrow fairways and thick rough. I think in a lot of ways he conceded that this is the end of an era for Phil, and he needs to start looking forward to the next chapter of his life and career.
And he got on Twitter. Let's don't forget that.
He jumped on Twitter
to a lot of fanfare. So it was a very eventful year for Phil.
In a lot of ways, which is crazy, here we are in the end of 2018, and we're still talking about Tiger and Phil being the guys at the top of the list, just like it's been every year. And but even in those conversations, it's still Phil chasing Tiger, right?
Yep.
Phil wins at Mexico.
It's a big deal. It's not a competition.
It's not a competition, but Tiger continues to overshadow Phil no matter what, no matter when, no matter what year it is. It's just kind of the way it is, and it's just kind of the way it's always going to be.
2 weeks after Phil wins in Mexico, Tiger makes a run at Valspar. That was a bigger deal than Phil winning in Mexico. It's like anything you can do.
I was at both.
Trust me,
it's very much a bigger deal.
All right, where else we want to go? We don't necessarily have to go in order.
How about the player of the year? No respect for Brooks. This is exactly why Brooks Koepka hates the media.
So what are you saying?
Brooks Koepka thinks he is the one and only newsmaker in 2018. This was a huge year. Rex, keep in mind, this is a guy who sat out for the first, 3 months of the season, 3.5 months, didn't play the Masters because of a wrist injury that he thought potentially could be career threatening. To do what he did was just amazing and really portends well for the future, because this is a guy with a macho game, with a chip the size of Florida on his shoulder, who you can really expect some big things from.
Well, and I have Brooks third on my list. I mean, and you're right. Maybe that's wrong. What's wrong with the media? I'm not quite sure. For all of those reasons,
this is his motivation for 2019.
He should have gotten Player of the Year and Comeback Player of the Year. It's an absolutely amazing story. He watched the Masters from the couch.
And, I think Tiger would have something to say about the Comeback Player of
the Year. I think it would be closer than what you think. But the part that gets me about Brooks is, and the reason he's third on my list, and yes, he did all of these incredible things, and he wins two majors. But you look at it from 30,000 feet, and we're always trying to compare players to Tiger Woods, right? Like, he's the next Tiger Woods. Brooks is Tiger Woods. He's just a bigger, stronger, faster version of Tiger Woods. He's like LeBron to Michael Jordan.
Less charismatic version of Tiger Woods as well.
Sure. I mean, look, he's not going to make headlines. I mean, maybe that's why we get hung up on this. But if you look at it from just a pure talent point of view, from a production point of view, bigger, faster, stronger version of Tiger Woods. This is what he does better. Like, he learned from Tiger. He wants to be a better athlete. He wants to go out and do the game better. I don't see any drop-off in his game.
You just look at his major performance.
Yeah, right.
He's not going anywhere.
He only shows up in the big ones.
Yes.
And there's really nothing wrong with that.
I mean, it's weird that he's won the CJ Cup now and he's won the Phoenix Open. Other than that, he's the biggest big game hunter in the game. Like, he only shows up for those big events. He has a game that's perfectly suited to the big events. He narrows his focus to the biggest events. He's not going anywhere. And if he can pick off one a year,
one every other year,
when all's said and done in 10, 15 years, his resume is going to be awesome, one of the best of his generation.
I just don't see a weakness in his game. I mean, we were probably having this exact same conversation about Rory just a few years ago, but you could see how Rory's putting just wasn't consistent enough. I don't see that.
Brooks is a great putter, yeah. His wedges are excellent. He's a great iron player. He's clearly sharp between the ears.
So in 10 years from now, I don't want to get off on this little tangent, but so in 10 years from now, what's he going to have, 6, 7 majors and 10 tour events? He's going to win mostly only tour events, or mostly only majors and no tour events?
He's in the Hall of Fame.
No, he's already in the Hall of Fame. I think he's there now.
If Retief is the latest, yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think he's going to it's funny because Dustin Johnson has always overshadowed Brooks Koepka,
and
Brooks was maybe just his little workout buddy in South Florida and their friends.
Not anymore.
There is no comparison. Dustin Johnson has won a lot of FedEx St. Jude Classics in his career, but he has one major victory, which still defies logic. That's a different question. You can look at Dustin Johnson's game, and you can see some potential weaknesses. You look at Brooks Koepka's game, which is very similar, but it's more well-rounded, and he seems to play the majors better, which is why I think in 5, 10, 15 years, the resumes won't even compare. And Dustin Johnson's obviously a great player.
Yeah,
the number one in the world for...
And what we're looking for here, and this kind of leads to the debate that we always, you guys want to see how the sausage is made, and it's not always pretty. this is about this is newsmakers. This is who made the most headlines. And we can sit here and say that Brooks had a phenomenal year. We don't want to ignore that. Fact of the matter is, he didn't probably make the most headlines of all the players that are out there. I would say DeChambeau.
He doesn't want to make the headlines.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I would say Bryson DeChambeau is probably it.
He's certainly made.
I mean, just winning.
Uh-huh.
Like he did in the playoffs, winning 3 times last season. I think all those things factor into it, but he's constantly making headlines for all the wrong reasons sometimes.
I don't have a problem with that.
When did tour players start thinking about the COR of a flag stick? I mean, when does that ever come up? I mean, usually your eyes roll back when they mention COR of the driver, and that's a real thing. Like, suddenly you're trying to figure out how the ball is going to come off a flag stick. Only Bryson.
This is also the same guy who weighs his golf balls in Epsom salts. So I think that's kind of just the Bryson package. But I think he's gone from being a novelty act. I think the John Deere Classic win in 2017 was validation that his quirky methods, his unorthodox methods, work. And then I think this year he elevated into the upper echelon of golf. There's no doubt that what he's doing works and will continue to work. And he's such a player who's driven by self-belief that now he has every reason to believe that he belongs on the PGA Tour and that he's on the right track. That should be scary for the rest of the game's elite.
And I'm fascinated by this because he goes from the winning those two in the playoffs, and just 2 weeks before that, at the Open Championship. He has an epic meltdown on the reins that's there for the whole world to see.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we asked him about it for back-to-back weeks, and he was kind of baffled because it's in his mind, this is the process.
This is the process.
This is what needed to happen for me to get where I am.
Exactly. He goes, this is how I get where I am. I have to go through these times where I'm having these meltdowns. And, I mean, we're in store for 20 years of this, of these epic meltdowns followed by back-to-back.
No one's going to outwork him.
No one's going to outwork him. No one's apparently. I can't imagine anyone outthinking him.
I mean, he's always been a great ball striker. I covered him in college and amateur golf. In 2015, at U.S. Amateur was one of the best ball striking displays I've ever seen. Pro, amateur, men, women, whatever the case is, it was extraordinary. The difference in his game now is that he's learned how to putt.
Yep.
And he's learned how to putt consistently. It looks a little
despite the USGA.
It looks a little weird. Yes.
Despite the USGA.
This is a guy who was doing side saddle.
Yes. That's how
almost 2 years ago.
How sorts he was.
Yes. And now he runs it up his left arm, and it looks kind of weird, but he gets the ball in the hole. He knows how to measure the slope on the greens. Like, this is a guy who's going to put in the time to figure it out. And if things aren't going well, he's going to work his way out of it. There's just no doubt in his mind that he can do it now.
After he tosses a few clubs.
Sure.
Which I like. I like a little personality.
All right, don't we have to, I think somewhere everybody that we've talked about so far played in the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
Which was a cluster. If you're on one side.
If you're European, it was lovely.
If you're on the other, but that's got to be
Thomas
pretty.
Thomas Bjorn would say it was a thing of beauty.
It's got to be pretty
high. Frankie Molinari on the horn.
Plenty of headlines out of that before, during, and after where they're not.
Yeah, I mean, that's the gift that keeps on giving. Even during President's Cup years, all we can talk about is how this is going to build towards.
Well, we knew it was going to be this way. We sat at the same table a year ago, and what are going to be the biggest headlines next year?
Well, we knew, right, but did we know? Well, right, but did we know it was going to be this much of a disaster?
No. And I think that's the part.
I don't think the Americans thought it was going to be a disaster.
No, because you look at the expectations for the American team. They had just absolutely destroyed the international team at the President's Cup, almost finished that thing off on Saturday. This was supposed to be the best American team ever, and yet they came out and really just got their butts handed to them. And look, it was on a golf course. I'll give Thomas Bjorn and the Europeans credit. That was set up perfectly for their team.
If they played a stroke play event
at Le Golf National under those conditions, 10 out of 12 Americans would have lost the cut. The only ones who probably would have made the cut are the four assistant captains. Let's be honest. They had a better game for that golf course.
Perfect course for Zach Johnson.
For Zach Johnson, Matt Kuchar, Jim Furyk. It was perfect for them. Stricker, absolutely. So all of those things factor into it, but it was the dysfunction in the team room that just blows you away. All right, you got your butt handed to you, but somehow you guys are just going to come unglued.
Yeah.
I guess Patrick Reed would be the person we would say would just come unglued about all of this little thing, all of these little things that go on inside the team room that normally we don't hear about.
This was supposed to be the next generation that's tighter, and they've grown up playing junior golf together, no scar tissue. And then you get to the Ryder Cup, and it's like they started nipping at each other's throats again. Like, it just came out of nowhere just because of all the good vibes that we've seen over the last couple years. And I think it all boils down to Patrick Reed wanting to play with Spieth. Spieth clearly was done with that relationship. And it's hard to blame Jordan Spieth. You think about the situation he was thrown into in 2014. Patrick Reed at that point was very much a lone wolf, didn't have a whole lot of friends on tour. Tom Watson said, you take him.
And it worked out.
And it worked out, and Spieth got stuck. They had success, but there was the weird dynamic there of wanting to beat each other, which just isn't healthy. Let's be honest.
After a while, it gets old quick.
Yes.
Right.
So you can't blame Jordan Spieth for wanting other partners. It's not like they stuck Patrick Reed with number 150 on the FedEx
stuck
Cup
him
list.
With his idol.
With his idol. He should have been running through a wall for Tiger. Instead, he kind of threw him under the bus afterward. He played horribly. They were a horrible team together. And now you have a situation where, for the President's Cup in 2019, the Ryder Cup in 2020, Patrick Reed better hope that he qualifies on his own.
I would think so.
Because there's not going to be a whole lot of people stumping for him to get a captain's pick after selfish display.
He went from Captain America to the scapegoat. Yep. Let's face it. I mean, it wasn't a good look. It's a bad transition for him. And it's baffling to me, as you pointed out. Look, the Europeans had the exact same problems. They had to find someone to put John Rahm with. He is not a popular player in that team room. That's pretty well known. Rory McIlroy was gladly stood up, and I'll take him under my wing. I'll do what needs to be done. Somehow they're able to make these personality conflicts work, and the Americans can't. And the one thing that surprises me the most is I really thought Jim Furyk was going to be one of the best captains of our generation. And he made wrong decision after wrong decision after wrong decision, starting out as captain's picks and all the way through.
I said it to you guys there, I'll say it here, is I don't know why, but I just thought that a guy with a 10-20-3 career Ryder Cup record was going to do a better job as a captain. And I realize that that's a me problem.
Yeah.
Because that's
a very
lot
low
of bad
bar for success.
Exactly. Yeah. I just kind of thought it was going to be better. And that not a whole lot surprises me anymore. It really surprised me how much of a cluster the Americans were that week. It really did. Not that they lost, but just how they lost and how ugly. It really, truly surprised me.
Jim Furyk, he needs to shoulder a lot of the blame. That's the captain's. That's the captain's job. He's a very smart guy.
Too much blame and loss, too much credit and win.
I very much like him. I thought he did a great job in explaining a lot of his decisions. The explanations just made absolutely no sense.
Yeah,
that's
right,
the problem.
Right,
like
right.
He was, I thought he was great in the media tent with us. Like explaining him.
Yeah.
Those explanations just didn't make sense. I picked him apart completely after he put Phil in foursomes. There is no explanation under the sun that you could justify putting him out there. Right. And he tried. He tried to justify it. It was just the wrong decision, and he said that he would do it all over again, which was
and that was it to double down afterwards. Yeah. It was like, oh, Jim, what are you,
yeah,
what are you
in
doing,
a weird
buddy?
Way, this is the culture that they built. Look, this was born from Tom Watson and Phil Mickelson and the task force and everything. The players wanted greater voice. I think we've seen the extreme end of that now, where you have so many players with so many voices and so many opinions. No one is a soldier anymore. No one's willing to just take an order and go out and do it. Everybody wants to have input. Patrick Reed being the example here. Phil Mickelson being the example. He is clearly the default leader in that team room, and he made a lot of decisions for Jim Furyk that probably were bad decisions, and now Furyk has to live with them. This is the extreme example of that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, in 2020, they're going to be heavy favorites again, and they'll beat the Europeans because the fairways there are going to be 80 yards
be
wide.
Long
and then
long,
we'll be back in the same song and dance for 2022 in Rome.
If you talk to Harrington, he would argue that, look, Whistling Straits is a little bit more of a European setup. I don't know if we're going to get those dramatic setup swings that we got from Hazeltine National to Le Golf National.
All right, where else are we going to go? We got a pretty solid top five-ish. Just throw out some other.
Well, I mean, if you kind of go down the list, the new tour schedule, and I know that comes into effect this year, but certainly it was a hot topic going through the season. I mean, if you start with the players moving back to March, PGA moving to May, those are two huge transitions
there. Open now being the last major, which is a little bit odd.
Yeah. And everything's just more condensed. You essentially have the same number of events, but everything's more condensed, and it ends at the Tour Championship, and that is just going to be nuts.
In late August.
Yeah. In late August, and it's going to be a handicap event, and I don't know what the public reaction is going to be to that, but I know
know the public reaction to the announcement, and it's not very good.
All I know what I'm going to be doing on Sunday afternoon at East Lake next year is a bunch of math, trying to figure out, well, who should be winning this? Yep. And that's not, it's not going to be a good look for the tour. It's going to take them a while to tinker with this and get it right.
But I also think we need to just stop thinking of it as a tournament, which is where the tour is aired. Because it is still a tournament.
Right.
It's still going to count as a tournament win. Mm-hmm. That's where they aired. Just call it a FedEx Cup shootout at the end of the year. Say, don't make it an official win. Just say, this is our shootout. And I think people would grasp that more easily. The fact that you're calling it an official win, but that guy's not necessarily shooting the lowest score for that week, just doesn't add up. So I think the Tour Championship is certainly going to be interesting to watch. I just don't like the fact that that's an official win. I think the idea is okay.
Yeah,
I think the execution
it's
just
gonna take
is not
some getting used
great.
To.
Well, and players are going to have they're going to need a couple seasons to wrap their mind around this because you have so many big events that are now crammed into a much much shorter window, and what you're going to end up with is 2 weeks on, a week off, 3 weeks on, a week off, and I think what you're going to end up seeing down the road is players picking and choosing a little bit more carefully. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be surprised if those traditional stops for the top players start taking hits, and even those could be WGCs. Simply because you're not going to prepare for the four tournaments that matter, and they still matter, and you can put the
five
with the players in there. The five tournaments that matter, you're going to look at those five and figure out the best way to prepare for them, regardless
Correct.
Of what's around them. I think
Correct.
That's where they're going to end up eventually.
Right. Yeah. Who usually doesn't play before but has to play the week before that? Who refuses to play two leading into it?
It's going to matter as much now.
Correct. It's going to matter as much now as it's ever mattered.
I do like the flow. Yeah. Of having a big event every month. I like the idea of it finishing before football when golf fans traditionally are turning off their
televisions. I don't like going from the Open to Memphis. That's one part I don't like.
You are going to get pneumonia. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Good luck with that, Rexy. Let me know how it goes.
You can't pack for those two extremes. I'm sorry. You just can't do it with one bag.
You have anything else, Lav? I've got a list of actually
I thought this year, I'm not sure if we've reached the tipping point or if we're getting close to reaching the tipping point. For me, it's driving distance. The fact, and I think Cam Champ coming on the PGA Tour, hitting it 350 routinely off every single par four, I think was kind of eye-opening. The season started with Dustin Johnson in Kapalua driving a par four, what was it, 440? I believe that par four was, in Brandel calling
downwind,
it.
Downwind, downhill.
Brandel calling it the greatest drive in the history of the PGA Tour. I think this year in particular, driving distance,
it felt like it was
it felt like it was more at the top of mind than it has been. And I think you're reaching a point now where if every par four is just wailing on driver and hitting a wedge into the green, the monotony of that I think is starting to weigh on golf fans' minds more than it has in the past. Rex, I know you disagree strongly with
this. No. I mean, my thoughts on driving distance are different from yours, but as it applies to newsmakers, I kind of rolled everything under one USGA window.
Okay.
Because
with the new rules.
Driving distance, that the green reading material decisions.
Rules coming out next year,
January 1st. Okay. All that. And what happened at Shinnecock? I mean, there's a bunch of things where you
just
can look.
The
USGA did not have a great year. I mean, they didn't
get... Which is a very evergreen comment.
Yes, they didn't get Shinnecock right again, which is amazing. I mean, how do you mess it up two times in a row? Again, it's a very, very straightforward thing. And no, I think driving distance is an issue. I don't know that you and I agree on the outcome, which would, in your mind...
I don't know what the solution is. Yeah, right. I'm not sure bifurcation is a good idea.
No, it's not.
Rollback doesn't seem... Who wants to see Dustin Johnson hit a 280?
Nobody, and that's my point. Are you not entertained? I don't know.
Entertainment and a test of skill are two different things.
I still think it's a test of skill. I think that's a ridiculous comment. But you and I play golf, and it's not a problem. You and I aren't hitting the ball too far. It's not, the game's not boring for us. .00
Definitely do not hit it too far.
0.0002% of the public are professional golfers.
So why don't you bifurcate?
It might be a problem for them. That seems to me the only way to go, and I just don't see it happening.
Why not?
I just think the way the rules of the game, the history of the game, we've always played the same courses, amateurs, pros alike. We've always played the same equipment, amateurs, pros alike. I think to put a divide between those two would be a step too big. If not for the USGA, then definitely for the RNA.
You don't like the metal bat or the aluminum bat, wood bat?
I think it's a good example, and you can also find a similar example when it comes to tennis. I mean, they slowed the ball down in tennis because the serves were getting out of hand. And again, in my mind, it's the most... It's the easiest option. It's the low-hanging fruit. But by that same token, USGA might go for it. RNA is never going for it. I mean, what should happen and what will happen are two different questions.
What's the hardest thing to do in golf?
You're asking the wrong person.
Six footer above the hill?
Hit a... you guys chipping?
just
100-yard wedge shot. I'm not sure what your answer is going to be. The correct answer, of course, is hitting a long and straight drive. And that skill has been diminished through technology. You look at PGA Tour setups, if there's no rough, guys are just hitting driver 14 times. They're hitting it all over the lot. Then they're hitting wedges over trees.
There are plenty of examples where that's not the case. I mean, we could sit here and have this debate forever. There are plenty of examples. The 10th hole at Riviera is still one of the best holes on the PGA Tour, and everybody on tour can drive it, and no one tries to because it's such a well-designed hole that you're better off laying back in the fairway and trying to hit a wedge on the green or whatever.
It's just one hole.
But it's one hole of 46 events.
We don't need bifurcation or rollback or new rules. We just need better designed tour courses is my argument.
That's going to take a long time to implement.
All right, I got a few other before we wrap this up here. We've been going at it for 30 minutes or so, but a couple other ones. Mercer Baxter, and how about head scratchers? Spieth, Day, McIlroy, Fowler, Garcia. I'm just throwing names out there.
I mean, at least Day and
Day
Rory
won.
One at least. You know, Spieth
to me was a huge.
Disappointment. We also have to talk about, Francesco Molinari had the summer of all summers. I know super sexy, and then him and Fleetwood, how they were
romantically involved at the Ryder Cup.
I mean, that was terrific.
Yeah, they are fun every year.
They're more enjoyable in defeat, and certainly more enjoyable in victory.
You know, and we talked about Bryson, but also there were four, three-time tour winners this year: Bubba, JT, Bryson, and DJ.
Right.
I mean, I'm just sort of spitballing here.
I thought Spieth was a big story.
I would agree.
Beginning the year with mono and kind of getting off on
for reasons I didn't think would be
getting engaged, and perhaps his impending nuptials was on his mind. He clearly developed some harrowing version of the putting yips for the majority of 2018. I think when you look statistically, him declining in every single statistical category, every single one, was something I didn't see because
it's baffling.
He's been so great for so long. I think he'll get it back.
But there's
questions of where he fits in now with the modern game against these big brawny hitters.
Yeah.
Is that all you have to...
Ditto.
No, I agree. Jordan is an interesting case study in my mind, because when he's putting well, we've seen what he can do. I mean, he can be an absolutely dominant player, and yet once the putting got off a little bit, he struggled to get it back. And I'm not saying that he won't get it back, but
It's been a year and a half now that he hasn't.
Indication of what we can expect from him in his career, to be fair. That I don't see him. Brooks Koepka, I can see being dominant for the next 10 years. I can't see Jordan Spieth being dominant consistently every year, year in and year out for the next 10 years.
He needs to be perfect, and it seems now that putting has almost become mental with him. He can talk as much as he wants about his eye lines and his hand position and his ball position and his stance, but you just want to shake him and say, Jordan, you've been an amazing putter your entire
life.
Yeah,
you're Jordan
life.
Spieth, dude.
You are Jordan Spieth. You are one of the greatest putters we've ever seen.
Go figure it out.
Just go back to what feels right. Don't be thinking about your ball position and your eye line. Just think about it and just go.
And look, as it applies to Ricky Fowler, he's one of the most entertaining pros out there, one of the nicest guys out there. But what are your expectations for Ricky Fowler?
I don't know.
Do you expect him to win three times a year?
Well,
because that ain't happening.
It happened in 2015.
Not on a regular basis is my point.
And I know the answer to this, but if you went to anybody outside of golf circles, maybe a lot in golf circles, and you showed them a picture of Ricky and a picture of Bryson and asked them to pick
who's got more wins?
Who's won more? They're picking the wrong person.
Bryson has as many wins in the last 5 months as Ricky has in his entire PGA Tour
career. Yeah, but who sells more hats?
Could be Bryson. I'm not sure.
No one's buying those stupid hats.
I know what I'm not getting you for Christmas. Yeah.
I have one.
All right. So now that we're done, I expect you each to write me a top 10 list and submit it for...
This podcast doesn't count.
All right. All right. That's it. Make sure you visit golfchannel.com in December to see all the top 10 newsmakers for 2018. For Rex and Ryan, I'm Jay Coffin. Thanks for watching this Golf Channel podcast presented by Top Golf. For more Golf Channel podcasts, visit golfchannel.com/podcast or subscribe via most podcast providers. We will see you next time.
Happy New Year.